So, as I mentioned early, or as Kurt mentioned, my name is Chris Stankitis. I am a manager of people. I build high-performing teams. I am a volunteer with Scouts Canada, who has taken my local town's group and grown it significantly, applying a lot of the same principles that I have learned and taken from my day job to growing that team. I focus on my employees first. There's an employees first, customer second movement that is starting to gain a lot of traction in the HR world. And if you haven't already heard about it, I'm sure you will, as it's starting to percolate its way down through various levels of management, to stop for a moment and pause and think, perhaps, maybe, we've been saying our most important resources are our employees, but we have to make sure that we're taking steps to ensure that they actually are. So about 5 years ago, because this problem actually goes back about 5 years ago, we were having some challenges. But first, to kind of frame things a little bit, I'm going to give a little bit of information about Pythian. So we've been in business for 20 years. We have over 400 employees located globally around the world. And we have quite a lot of clients that we provide consulting services for. We have different models of consulting. We have our traditional on-site and or remote delivery consultant on a fixed scope project basis, where we will, come in, work with our clients on a project, and at the end shake hands and part ways. We also have more of a managed service, staff-based augmentation embedded model, where we become part of our clients' teams on a long-term, open-ended basis, where we can very much become a member of their team, become familiar with their product, their application, their infrastructure, gain deep knowledge, and then work as trusted advisors along with our clients to influence decisions when it comes to architecture, roadmap, capacity planning. As a result of this, since we're a people-based business, we do quite a lot of hiring. So this is just some statistics from last year in 2017 around, kind of the number of people who we applied and then kind of the various stages of weed out and then the number of successful candidates who received offers and accepted offers. So hiring is a very large part of my job, and hiring is, in my opinion and in the opinion of many, the most important job of a manager. Becoming a manager, you come to this realization that it's no longer about your ability to deliver hands-on keyboard work, but your ability to build a team of people who can deliver that work. And so hiring people, hiring the right people, hiring amazing people is a manager's most important job. So if anyone was in my talk 3 years ago, the very first SRE con in Dublin at the Google office, this is just going to be a quick recap. If you don't remember it, it's okay. And if you weren't there, that's okay as well. So as I said, this discussion in my company started around 5 years ago. We were hiring people, but we weren't really getting the right type of people that we wanted. We were getting good people, but they were not really, they were having challenges keeping up with the type of work that was coming in. So we decided that we needed to look at our process and refactor it and grow it into a new model. I was very passionate about this, so my director at the time allowed me to take a step back from managing day-to-day teams and day-to-day projects and work with our HR people to completely throw out and revamp our HR process. It took quite a bit of work on the part of myself and one of my colleagues, who is a principal consultant by the name of Bill Fraser, to refactor both our technical side of our interview process and our non-technical side of our interview process. So prior to this refactor, hiring was a lot like playing bingo. You would have a job description with a long list of technologies. People would send in a CV with those technologies on the CV. Someone in HR would review the CV and play bingo, and that would generally get you into the interview process where all of those technologies would be verified in a very much a trivia style interview to validate that you said you have Apache. Well, I'm going to ask you questions about Apache. You said you know FTP. I'm going to ask you FTP questions. And it was very much testing your existing knowledge. The person who did the best in the trivia game tended to get the job offer, and that led to profit, or at least that was the idea. So the problem with this model is that it really focused on what you know now and what you have been doing in the past. It really rewarded regurgitation. You didn't necessarily need to actually show your thought process, and that was not very helpful because we all know that there's many ways to arrive to an answer, and that translates directly to how we can arrive to solutions. You know, there's like 5 ways you can do the same thing at the minimum in any task that we try to solve. And what's more important than whether or not you get the right answer is whether or not you can show your thought process on how you arrived at that answer. It goes all the way back to when we were in school. You do your math homework, you get a mark for getting the answer right, but you only get 1 mark out of 5 because the teacher was expecting you to show all of your work. Our old hiring process and many companies' hiring processes may not even be their old process, really just rewarded getting the answer right and rewarded that ability to regurgitate facts. If you knew obscure things, even better. But there's been an evolution, both in our technology and our culture. On the technology side, we've really moved from a mode of treating all of our servers and infrastructure like pets to treating it like cattle. In the olden days, the pet model, we would have hand-built artisanal systems administrated servers. There was a lot of time, blood, sweat, and tears dumped into those boxes. They often were named after some naming convention. I've had everything from the planets to Simpsons TV references to, everything under the sun. A lot of Greek and Roman gods, you know. We all had our favorite naming conventions, and we all had servers that were built by hand. And there was a lot of fear and a lot of stress because those servers were often built manually, badly documented, and there was always a big fear of those servers becoming sick. Because when those servers became sick, like, life stopped and everybody did what they could to resuscitate that server. And the big fear was that that server wasn't going to come back and we were going to have to rebuild that server because no one knew quite how to rebuild that server. Because even with the best documentations, there's documentation drift and we lived in a constant state of fear of these servers just leaving. And there was a very high emotional attachment. We put so many hours and weeks and months and even years into these servers that they were like our children, like our pets. And we relied literally on the backups because if we couldn't restore a server from backup, then we couldn't rebuild a server. And that was kind of the reality that we lived in on a very normal basis. But we've started to evolve. We're starting to create groups of servers that do the same thing. We're starting to move to an everything as code model. I say start to. Many people have already gotten there. And now we're in more of a point where we can treat our servers as less of pets and more as cattle. Uh-oh. Do I have a power supply? Yes, I do. One second. Pocket. I am short. That was a large step for me. So, since we are treating the servers as no longer as pets, we're able to have that less emotional attachment to them. We're able to have many servers doing the same job. We're trying our best to eliminate single points of failure. We're trying our best to not live in fear of a server going down. If a server goes down, we just bring a new one up that does the same job, because we've decided that we need to live in a world where everything we're doing is represented as code, that we can execute in an automated, reliable, repeatable fashion, and we're no longer enshrining this hand-built artisanal systems administration that we used to do in the past. On the cultural side, we're also having the speed of new technology come in at a much greater rate. So in the before time, in the long ago, you used to be able to count on your skills having relevance for a much longer period of time. And that was why we could have trivia-based hiring, because we wanted that person who had all of the knowledge, because we were working with the same stack of technology for a longer time. The current paradigm that we're working in and living in now is that the technology is shifting so fast that you're not going to have someone with 10 years of experience on a piece of technology, because no one's using a piece of technology that's 10 years old by and large anymore. With creating kind of an API gateway interfaced paradigm, the architecture is now moving to a pluggable state where any one component can be swapped out for another component that provides more warranty or utility, whether it's, you know, it saves us a few milliseconds, or it allows us to collect better telemetry data, or whether or not it allows us to, you know, do something that we need to do in our code base more efficiently. So we're moving from a point that this comic sums up very well, where, you know, the amount of experience you have in the past isn't necessarily as applicable or relevant to the work that's being done today. So we made a bet, and that bet was that we needed to focus our hiring strategy on soft skills. While not throwing out the entire baby with the bathwater, we said that when it comes to technical skills, we have to evaluate a foundational technical skill and competency, but that our hiring focus needs to move from just hiring the person with the most technical skills to focusing on a strategy of soft skills. Because what we really need are not the person who knows the most technology. What we need are people who can, you know, exhibit soft skills that will allow us to build stronger teams. So the challenge is that as highly technical people, we're really good at evaluating technology and really good at evaluating technical competence. It's kind of our safe zone. We're really good at it, and we're not necessarily so good at evaluating the soft skills. Some of us are socially awkward, and we're not exactly very soft-skilled focused people ourselves. And it's really hard to go like, well, I can compare whether or not this person knows what they're talking about when it comes to Python, but how do I evaluate someone's ability to learn new things quickly, or work as a team player, or have good time management skills? So that was where we started seeing a problem. I'm very fortunate at Pythian, where I have very many peers who are also managers. I've worked previously for my career for a lot of small startup companies where I was the only technology manager. and I didn't have a peer group to support me. So at Pythian, we have many team managers, and we have a peer support group that we can go, we get together and we talk as managers. And while I was preparing this talk originally, I asked them, I said, so when you're doing a hiring interview, a fit interview, how far into that interview do you know that you have the right person? And the majority of the answer from over 20 people that I did this straw poll for was, oh, I know in the first 5 minutes that I've got the right person. And that was very disappointing because it really meant that we were conducting our fit interviews by and large as exercise in confirmation bias. So people would make a decision within the first couple of minutes on a candidate and then use the other 50 minutes to reinforce that decision. That's what confirmation bias is. And I was like, well, how do you compare two candidates to each other? You know, when you're asking different questions to each candidate and you're engaging in confirmation bias, and they didn't really have much of an answer. So, you know, as a SRE, I wanted to kind of put a framework around how we did soft skill evaluation. We had a great framework around how we did technical evaluation, which we did look at and revamp for this hiring process to just try and up our game, bring it in line with the current standards. But we didn't have any framework on how hiring managers evaluated candidates. It was the Wild West. Everyone could do what they wanted, ask what questions they wanted, and then ultimately make the decision. I said, well, that's really comparing apples and pears. I need to be able to compare apples to apples. I need to be able to have a way that I can evaluate non-technical skills and against multiple candidates and then be able to rank that and be able to come up with the strongest candidate at the end. So that really went into the idea of data-driven hiring. So what we did is, again, we came up with a standard set of evaluations for non-technical skills. Standard evaluations allow you to really overcome unconscious bias. We also created a policy by which we would have a second hiring manager in every interview from the same kind of practice. So, for example, if one of my colleagues' teams was hiring, I might be brought into the hiring interview, the fit interview, as a second set of eyes, and we would submit our evaluations to the talent acquisition person kind of separately, and they could see a comparison. And the hope was that we would be seeing the same things in the candidate and that our overall scoring would be around the same. And by doing this, if we had multiple candidates, which is the situation you always want to be in, only having one candidate to choose from is always a situation to avoid if at all possible. By doing this and having this evaluation method, we were able to compare apples to apples. So how we did it, we essentially had to start really looking at needs versus wants and really identifying what our needs were when it came to non-technical skills. Again, as technical people, we were very easy to come up with a list of technical skills that we wanted a candidate to have. We had to sit down and think hard and long about what non-technical skills we wanted. Once we identified those skills, and just like technical skills, non-technical skills, if you look up non-technical skills, you're going to find hundreds of non-technical skills, and you can't evaluate every candidate on every non-technical skill, just like you can't evaluate every candidate on every technical skill. So we had to really sit there and decide what were our important must-have non-technical skills. We tried to keep it to a list of about 5 to 7, and then we would come up with questions that allow us to evaluate that skill. We came up with a ranking form and an evaluation form and guidelines on how to use those. And we did a lot of training for our hiring managers and the different people who were involved. And then we started iterating. So one of the first things we learned when we started iterating through the process is that, you know, we may have 7 non-technical skills that are needs for us, that are important, but there are some that are more important than others. And so we had to, we all knew that, you know, we had a few skills that were our key skills. But what we learned through our first few runs of this was that is that some of the other technical skills that were required, non-technical skills that were required, but not, say, the most important skills for us, were allowing candidates to score higher than candidates who had the core non-technical skills that we were looking at. So we quickly applied a weighting to our non-technical skills so that we would have a multiplier when we scored things to allow the most important non-technical skills to bubble to the top. So that's not to say that if it was on the list, it was important. We wanted the candidate to have that skill in some way, shape, or form. But we didn't want the candidate to have maybe the 4th or 5th most important technical skill. We wanted people with the 1st and 2nd most technical skill to bubble up to the top. So we did that by applying a weighting so that when you scored someone, for example, a 5 on growth mindset, that would actually give them a total of 25 points, whereas if we were evaluating a different technical skill that had a 1x multiplier, the most they could actually score was 5. So it made sure that the non-technical skills that we identified as the most important would bubble up to the top with our candidates instead of having people who were strong in the least important technical skills score higher than those with the most important technical skills. So what was important to us, and it was really interesting because on Wednesday there was a talk about the results from the SRE survey, and they listed the top 5 technical skills for SREs, categories, not specific technologies, and they listed the top 5 non-technical skills. And it was really interesting to see how in the same ballpark our hiring process was with those non-technical skills. It was really interesting. So at the beginning, we want to make sure we have someone who has a good inspect and adapt mindset, you know, someone who can roll with things and think well on their feet. The next is a growth mindset. Growth mindset versus fixed mindset is a talk all in and of itself, but we needed people who were excited about learning and who wanted to come in, and when we said, oh, you know, one of our clients is using this new technology we haven't really worked with very much, we need someone who's going to jump in and learn about it. We wanted hands to shoot up instead of people to hide under the desks. Or we wanted everyone to step forward instead of, you know, everyone stepping backwards and that one person who was too slow ending up being the person who got tagged to learn the new piece of technology. Time management is very important. We are consultants, so we need to manage our time well. We need to be efficient. And we also hire people from around the globe, so it's very likely that a manager such as myself might have people working for them that are in time zones where I am not working. So no one wants a micromanaging manager, and the way you end up not having a micromanaging manager is by being able to show them that you can manage your time. We wanted to have a person who could handle stress and emotions well, because we do end up having to go in and extinguish fires from time to time. And we wanted to make sure that we had risk-aware people who are not going to be cowboys, who are going to be adding undue risk into the work that they're doing, especially since most of the work we're doing are in other companies' environments, and they very much do not like when consultants break things. In addition, we obviously would interview for manager fit, because you want to make sure that the person you're evaluating is going to work well with the manager style of the person they're going to report to, team fit, and corporate fit as well. So what we found is that finding awesome people that you want to work with is a long and expensive process. There are a lot more people that you turn away than you accept. And everything is going to take longer than you want it to take. It would be a great world if you could hire someone and have them start in a month. But that's often not the case. It takes quite a lot of time and effort to evaluate people, to screen them, to ensure that you're trying to make a great decision. What we also learned is that bias is real, and everybody comes into these situations with bias that they have to overcome and be aware of. And being aware of your bias is the first step to overcoming it. And putting in time and understanding and realizing that when you're getting excited about someone, to stop and put a checkpoint in and say, am I becoming excited about this person because of any of my biases, or am I genuinely excited about this person because they are the right person? The other thing we learned as well is you're going to get a lot of pressure to compromise and settle, especially if you've been turning down candidates because they're not the right match. The longer the job stays open, the job posting stays open, the more pressure you're going to have to settle, and you should not. You do not want to settle, because in almost every occasion, bringing on the wrong person will cause more problems than it will solve in the long run. The other thing we learned is that there's a difference between a gut feeling and confirmation bias. And you do need to trust your gut, but you need to make sure that you understand the difference between your gut feeling and confirmation bias. And it was only through iterations on this process that we started to learn those differences. And that also this process is an evolution. It should always be going through continuous improvement. You should always be leveling it up. You should always be looking at the changes happening both culturally and from a technology standpoint, and reevaluating and revising the process to make sure it stays relevant. So we achieved victory by and large. We are hiring awesome people. They are excited to come on board, do the work we're doing, and are, you know, generally happy people to do their job. But everything is continuing to evolve. So I'm going to just have a quick slide about kind of what we're working on, because we're not by any means perfect. I'm not going to go into too much detail, because this is the stuff we're working on. So maybe I'll do another talk in a few years to tell you how that's all been working out. But having kind of had a process that's working for us, we can now start looking at other things. So we want to continue to further eliminate biases and do that. Part of it is by making sure we continue to have structured interviews and making sure that we are following our processes. We want to focus more on hiring for diversity. In order to do that, we're quite ethnically diverse, because we do have people in over 40 countries, but we want to continue to focus on women in technology, the LGBT community, people with color. You need to have champions for that, and we are very fortunate that our CEO is a champion who's been recognized by the Women in Communication and Technology Institute for our efforts on women in technology, but we want to do more because it is important to have diverse teams, which has become a bit of an unofficial theme through many of the talks at this conference. And we also want to have technical challenges that don't suck. So we've revised some of our technical challenges for different roles, but we want to continue to revise them further so that our technical challenges are not just answering questions, but they're more showing work and code samples that allow us to then run something, achieve a result, and then spend time in the interview actually working on thought process. Again, why did you make this choice? Why did you consider this? Did you consider that? And getting deeper into people's minds as to why they did what they did instead of rewarding the fact that they got the right answer. So I think I have like a minute for questions. So if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer them. If not, I will be out in the hallway afterwards and more than happy to speak about this. I know there are a lot of talks happening here, and I genuinely appreciate people sticking around for this track when they had very many other choices. And thank you very much for listening to me today.
Hi. You had an interesting slide about the pipeline and how many people get cut at each stage. Did you have a code test somewhere in the middle?
So we have a technical challenge that involves both writing code and standing up infrastructure.
Right. So, the question part was, how does that, from a diversity point of view, help? Because my reading on this is that code tests are quite good in that they don't see color or gender, but they're not the soft skills, which you then spoke about.
Right. So we do our best to remove any identifying information from the people who are evaluating things at the earlier stages, but at some point you have to get face-to-face with the person.
Yep.
So when we look at resumes, identifying information is stripped out. When we evaluate technical challenges, identifying information is stripped out. When they get to the technical interview, that's the first time we ever see the person. And at that point, at some point you have to see the person you want to hire and work with. So that's what we've done so far. I'm absolutely, if other people have found ways to kind of continue with hiring in a blind fashion further along the path than we have, then I'm up for listening.
One last question. Oh, hi, great talk. My question is, would Pythian, or have they ever shared their ranking system or how you do your weights or like the form? Is that anything that Pythian could ever make available?
I'm sorry, I can't hear what the question was.
Oh, I'm sorry. Has Pythian ever made their like forms available? As in, these are the questions, this is the weight we give. Is that something you could share?
I can talk about it. I don't know if I can share it. But okay. Essentially, in our HR system, we have this like 1-to-5 law of the universe. Everything has to be scored 1-to-5. We're not a fan of it, but it's like the constraint of the system. So we evaluate everyone in a 1-to-5 manner, and then we have a 1-to-5 multiplier that we can apply to the skills that we feel. We rank our skills from most important to least important. And it's important to note, and I have it up on the slides, that if even a skill that is ranked as least important is still mandatory because it's on the evaluation. So we end up with a overall score out of like 100, and then we apply a little bit of math to turn that into a 1-to-5 score so it can go back into our HR system. So that's kind of how we have it set up, is we evaluate as like a 100-point evaluation, and then we apply a little bit of math to cut it down into a 1-to-5, and basically we're looking for 4s or 5s, and 3s are kind of conditional passes that we generally have a second set of eyes kind of overlook and kind of make a decision on whether or not we're going to move forward. Thank you.